Osho, Tao, The Pathless Path, Volume 2, talks and extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
The first question. Jesus, Buddha, and Suzuki have been my masters for 5 years now. Whenever I had a problem, I would call on Jesus' name for help. Now you are my master. What do I do with the rest of them? Jesus says a man can only serve one master. He will either love one and hate the other, or hate the one and love the other. Please comment. The first thing, to be a disciple does not mean to be monogamous. To be a disciple simply means to be ready to learn. A real disciple becomes connected from one master to every other master possible. Your master becomes a link to you, to all the masters of the past, of the present, and the future too. But human mind is very narrow. We turn everything into jealousy, possessiveness. At least don't do that with a master. It is difficult for you to conceive how you can love two masters. But the problem arises because you consider two masters as two. If you have really loved me, you have loved Jesus through me. You have loved Buddha through me. You have loved Zarathustra through me. If you have really loved me and you have seen me, you have seen all the masters. If you have not loved and not seen me, then the problem will arise. Then there will be a choice whether to choose Jesus or me or Buddha or me. And if the question arises, that means you are not yet a disciple. You are not related to me at all. If you are related to me, then there is no problem. Then suddenly you will feel for the first time you are related to all known, unknown masters. They will all become allied through me. That is the meaning of a master. If a master closes your mind and makes you narrow, he is not a master at all. Remember it. You can still call on Jesus. You can still call on Krishna. There is no competition between me and them. In fact, my whole effort here is to make you able to call them more intensely. When you call Jesus really, you have called me. When you call me really, you have called Jesus. These are just names. Jesus is an emptiness. The emptiness we were talking about just the other day. His whole heart, all his seven holes of the heart are open. He is a door. So is Buddha. So is Krishna. How can you make a distinction between two emptinesses? Can you? I have heard. A small boy was playing in the garden and the father came from the office tired. And the boy was very jubilant. And he asked the father, "What do you do in the office the whole day. And the father was so tired that he was not interested in the kid's questions. And he said, nothing. The boy stood there puzzled for a moment. And then he said, but how do you know that now you have finished doing it? If you do nothing, how do you know when it is over? If you do something, you know when it is over, because there is a definition. But nothing has no definition. If Jesus is nothing and Buddha is nothing and I am nothing, how do you define where you demark? Here your master ends and Jesus begins. There is no fencing between me and Jesus. So if you enter in me, you have entered Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Lao Tzu. You have entered all. If you enter Jesus, you have entered me. So drop these foolish ideas. Certainly it will be easier for you to be related to me. I am here, alive, present. Jesus has not been here for 2,000 years. Whatsoever you know about Jesus is not about Jesus, but about the people who have said things about Jesus. Whatsoever you know about Jesus is not direct, is not immediate. 2,000 years of corruption, 2,000 years of distraction, 2,000 years of interpretation has changed a lot. That is the meaning of choosing a living master, so you can know the dead masters too. Now Jesus is not direct. 2,000 years are standing between you and him. Millions of screens. Great smoke around. Whatsoever you know about Jesus is doubtful. It is not certain. It cannot be certain. Even while you are facing me, whatsoever you know about me is doubtful. So what to say about Jesus and what to say about Krishna 5,000 years? And naturally, Krishna has been corrupted more because Hindus are great scholars. Jesus had his followers, very simple people, a fisherman, a farmer, a woodcutter. Even if they wanted to curb Jesus too much, they could not. They were not efficient enough. They were not knowledgeable people. But Hindus, the Brahmins, the Pandits, Krishna's lot was far worse. Because all these Brahmins and commentators and interpreters and 2,000 years of commentary. The Bible has not a single commentary. Gita has 1,000 commentaries. Now if you want to know what Krishna said, it is almost impossible. You will go mad if you go through all the 1,000 commentaries that are the famous ones. I am not talking about all the commentaries. If all the commentaries are counted, there will be thousands and thousands. If you go through all these commentaries, you will simply go crazy. They are talking such diverse things, diametrically opposite to each other. How can you connect with Krishna? The only way to connect is to find a living master to whom you can surrender. A living master who is still in the body, whose emptiness is still shrouded, shrined by a body and a mind. Whose inner space is still in flesh. Through him you will have a taste of emptiness. Through that test you will know all the people who have existed ever on the earth. Because the taste of emptiness is the same. Just think it in this way. You enter into a poor man's cottage, a hut. The walls are different. When you go in a palace, the walls are of marble. When you go into a poor man's hut, the walls may be only of bricks, or not even that, maybe just leaves and bamboos. But the inner space of the hut and the palace is the same. The walls differ. The palace is marble walls, very costly. The poor man's hut has bamboo walls. But the emptiness that is surrounded by the palace walls and the hut walls is the same. The space is the same. Krishna speaks one language, Buddha another, Jesus another still. But this is language, the meditation, the inner experience is the same. If you have chosen, let me say it to you, if you have chosen me, you have chosen all. Through me, you will be able to understand all those who have lived before and who are going to live after. I promise even about the future, because the taste of emptiness is never going to be different. Many more enlightened people will walk on the earth tomorrow, day after tomorrow, centuries after centuries. We don't know their names, but that doesn't matter. Whenever there will be an enlightened man on the earth, the taste will be the same. You try to taste me. And the taste is so clear. It is the taste of hot chilies. You cannot miss it. Jesus, Buddha and Suzuki have been my masters for 5 years now. Good. They prepared you to come to me. Otherwise you would not have been here. Feel grateful. Feel thankful. And always remain thankful towards them. Otherwise you would not have been here. They have prepared the path. Sometimes it happens, if you had come 5 years before to me, you may not have understood a word. Suzuki must have prepared you. Krishnamurti must have helped you. They have given you a direction. Now you can understand me better. Let me tell you one very beautiful story. Master Tenen Tanka, a great Zen master, once visited a temple, stayed in the temple in the night. The abbot of the temple was very happy because Tenen Tanka was a very famous master. It was a great blessing to the temple that he had come there. But in the night, Tenen did something which was unbelievable to the abbot. It was a cold night and Tenen burnt a wooden Buddha to create fire. The abbot of the temple was shocked when he saw the fire in the temple he rested in. It was middle of the night. And when he looked and one great Buddha statue was missing and he saw the head there, just half burnt. He said, "What have you done? Are you mad? You have burned my Buddha." Tenin laughed, poked the ashes with his staff. The abbot asked, "What are you doing now, you madman?" Tenin said, "I am trying to find the relics of the Buddha, the bones, what the Hindus call flowers." It was the turn of the abbot to laugh. He laughed. He said, "You are certainly mad. A wooden Buddha has no relics." Tenin asked, "Are you certain?" The abbot said, "Yes, I am certain. How wooden Buddha can have relics?" Then Tenin said, "Bring other Buddhas too. Your temple have many, and you need not have so many. And the night is cold, and I am shivering. Look, the living Buddha is shivering, and the wooden Buddhas are sitting on the pedestals. Bring them." The abbot could not do that. But Tenin rushed, brought another two Buddhas and threw them in the fire. At that moment, the abbot became a little doubtful about his own saying that a wooden Buddha has no relics. Now he started feeling that he is also guilty. Had he not said this, at least two Buddhas would have been saved. Now he is also guilty. This man is mad, but what I am doing here? And why I didn't stop him? But he couldn't stop. He himself had said that a wooden Buddha has no relics. So what was the point to stop? A great doubt arose in him, and the story says, therefore the abbot fell into hell. Now, not Tenin. He has burnt the Buddha. He never fell in any hell. He has reached into Nirvana. And the priest is suffering, the abbot is suffering in the hell. A strange story. Very illogical. If Tenin had gone to the seventh hell, we would have understood. It serves him right. But Tenin is in Nirvana, sitting with Buddha himself, maybe taking a cup of tea, gossiping. And the abbot is suffering in the seventh hell. These Zen people are strange. What type of stories they make. But there is logic in it, great logic in it. The logic is that when Tenin burnt the Buddha, there was no doubt in his mind. Not a single doubt. In fact, it was not a Buddha at all. It was just wood. What nonsense to call wood Buddha? Just because you have carved a form on it? It is not a Buddha at all. He was so certain, that's why he could bring two more and enjoy it. And the night was certainly cold. And I am all in favor with Tenin. He did well. And Buddha must have enjoyed in Nirvana. Sitting there in his moksha, he must have enjoyed. This man is doing well, perfectly well. That's what he has been teaching his whole life. That don't look for the formless in the form. Don't look for the message in the word. Go deeper. Enter into the formless. Don't look for the soul in the body. Go deeper. Reach the inner emptiness. And that's what Tenin had done when he poked his staff in the ashes. What he was saying, this is simply body, there are not even bones in it. What to talk about the soul? This is just wood, dead wood. He was absolutely certain. His certainty was utterly absolute. But the abbot doubted. He became a little doubtful what I had said. Have I committed a crime? He must have shivered deep in his backbone. He must have trembled. That fear, that doubt, that trembling threw him in hell. Now, if you have really come to me, the problem will never arise. What to do with Jesus and what to do with Krishnamurti and what to do with Suzuki. If the doubt arises, that simply shows you are still on the way. You have not yet arrived. You are just in the middle, hanging in the limbo, between the past and the present. If you come close to me, you will see all the faces that you have ever loved. Sometimes my face will be that of Krishnamurti. Those who are close, they know. Sometimes my face will be that of Krishna. Those who love me, they know. Sometimes my face is that of a Buddha. Those who have really surrendered, they have seen it. You are still a little far away. You are still wavering. The past pulls you back. You cannot go headlong. If you come really close, the question will dissolve on its own. And you will not need to do anything with Jesus, Buddha, or Suzuki, or Krishnamurti. And remember, they have prepared you. In this story of Tanin, there is another part. I would like to tell that too. It is said that when Tanin himself was a seeker, he went to a great master. The name of the master was Matesi. Matesi looked into his eyes, shook his head and said, "No, no, I am not your master. At least not now. Go to Sekito." That was the master who was an opponent of Matesi. His monastery was just on the confronting hill, and he was the opposite master. And Matesi said, "No, no, I am not your master, not yet. You go to Sekito. He is your master." And he didn't say he will be. He said he is. So Tanin went to Sekito. Now, have the delicate and subtle taste of it. Because Tanin has accepted Matesi as his master, he has to follow the advice. He couldn't say, "I will not go. You are my master." That would have been foolish. That would have been disobedience. He said, "Okay, master, if you say so, I can go anywhere. So Sekito is my master." The others who were present, they thought, "Poor chap, where he is going? He should have insisted. He should have forced himself. He should have waited on the door and fasted. And should have insisted that you are my master and I will be with you." Poor chap. Where he is going? But Tanin was really innocent. He said, "Okay, if you say so, I can go anywhere. If you send me to hell, I will go there." He went to Sakito. 3 years he served the master. Meditated, served, meditated, served. After 3 years the master said, now you are ready and I'm going to initiate you into sannyas. Felin came, bowed down in his feet, and he said, yes, master, you initiate me. Not a single doubt arose in his mind that what is happening now. If he initiates me, what about my master, Matis? In fact, I am his disciple and he has sent me here, and now I am getting into troubles. And this man says, I will initiate. But it's okay. If Tesi sins, then it is okay. Then Matesi saved his head. This Siketo saved his head, as Buddhist bhikkhus have to be saved, and told him to repeat the woe of a Buddha bhikshu. The moment Sekito started saying that, whatsoever I say, you repeat, he heard the first sentence, closed his both ears, and ran away laughing. The Buddhist monk has to take a woe, a traditional woe, that I will never commit any crime, I will never commit anything illegal, I will not steal, I will not murder, I will not do this and that, thousand and one things, it is a long list. The moment he said, you take this woe, he put his hands on his ears, he will not hear, and laughed and escaped. Sikato's disciple said, we always had thought that he is a little mad. Somebody followed him, caught hold of him outside the ashram, and asked, what is the matter? He said, I have never committed any sin. How a man can commit a sin? The whole teaching of the Buddha is that all doing is false, illusory. I have never committed, how I can commit in the future? And what type of nonsense is this? This woe. I am going to my master. And I am going to hit him hard. Why you should send me to such a fool? He rushed to his old master's monastery. The master was not there. He went into the temple. Only Buddha was sitting. The Buddha statue. He jumped on Buddha's head. And he said, you are. And he sat mounted on Buddha's shoulder. And he was so mad that a few disciples of Matesi came and looked from the house, and he looks mad sitting on Buddha. They rushed to the master and they said to the master, a queer monk has come and has mounted upon the wooden Buddha. What shall we do? Matesi himself came to see. He recognized the young seeker and he recognized his awakening too. He said, you are so innocent. You are nature itself, Tao itself. Tenin means nature. And now I am your master and you are my disciple. Tenin came down from the Buddha statue, fell down in the master Matesi's feet and said, I am grateful to you for giving me my monk's name. That's why he is called Tenin. Tenin means nature, Tao, innocence. Now, the master said, now I am your master and you are my disciple. These 3 years were needed with Sekito. These 3 years were a must. So, with whomsoever you have been before, being with me should feed you, make you feel grateful to them all. And I am not saying only about Krishnamurti, Jesus, Suzuki and people like that. Even the ordinary people you have lived with, the parents you were born, and the friends and the enemies that you had, and the teachers you studied in the school, college, university. They all are part of your growth. Those who helped and those who hindered, they all are part of your growth. A single one missing and you will not be here. So feel grateful to your parents, to your friends, to your enemies, to your masters, to your teachers. Feel grateful to your all relationships that have existed in the past, because this is the culmination of it all. So don't ask such a question. Now you are my master, what do I do with the rest of them? No, it is bad taste. Worship them, continue to worship them, continue to be grateful to them. Jesus says a man can only serve one master. You have misunderstood Jesus. When he says that, he is not saying that you cannot serve two enlightened masters. He is not comparing two enlightened masters. He is not saying you can serve only Jesus or Buddha, or Krishna or Jesus. He is not saying that. Christians have interpreted it that way, that you can serve only one master. So if you believe in Jesus, you have to believe in Jesus absolutely. And you have to believe that Jesus is the only door, the only begotten Son. Others may be good, saintly people, but not real enlightened masters. This is absolutely a misinterpretation of Jesus. When Jesus says you can serve only one master, look at his context. He was talking about either you can serve money or you can serve God. That was his context. Either you can serve the worldly desires, greed, ambition, politics, or you can serve God, meditation, desirelessness, peace, silence. You cannot serve two masters. That was his reference. You cannot serve Mammon and God both together. A person cannot be religious and political together. Not even a person like Mahatma Gandhi. Nobody can be political and religious together. If you are really political, religion will be a pretension. If you are really religious, you will not bother about politics. Who bothers? Or at the most, then politics will be a pretension. But a person cannot be both together. Because politics needs ambition, desire, competition, jealousy. All passions are needed. Religion says drop all the passions. Purification is needed. When Jesus says you cannot serve two masters, he means you cannot serve the outer and the inner together. He is not comparing between Buddha and Krishna and himself. Beware of misinterpretations. Whenever you are reading words of Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, be very careful. Your mind can do tricks with you. Your mind can color them with your own prejudice. Now I understand why this problem arises. This problem arises because our minds are very narrow, monogamous. You can love only one woman, you can love only one man. Even mothers think they cannot love all their children in the same way. If you insist, they will say yes. One is a favorite. Because of the narrowness of the mind. Because you think love has to be directed. Love need not have any direction. Love need not be a relationship. Love can be just a state of your being. In fact, a man is satisfied only when one becomes love. Not loving, when one becomes love. The greatest, the deepest longing inside your heart is not to become more loving. The deepest desire is to become love. And the difference, when you are loving, of course, you will be loving to somebody. And when you are loving to somebody, others will be in the shadow. When you focus your mind on one thing, everything else goes out of focus. When you are looking exclusively at one thing, everything is excluded out, bracketed out. Love can be a concentration, then it is monogamous. Love can be meditative, then it is not monogamous. And when love is not monogamous, then it is religious and spiritual. Listen, you are listening to me. You can listen through concentration as it is being taught in the universities. Concentrate. Out of fear and greed, you concentrate. Otherwise, you will fail in the examination. You will not come first. You will not be in the marriage. This and that. And you will lose the possibilities of a good job. And money and car and good house. So, you concentrate because of fear. That's why the more examination comes closer, students are more capable to concentrate. Because the fear and the greed are becoming more actual. Now, it is not just the idea. They are becoming solid realities. Concentration is out of fear and greed. Meditation is totally different. When you concentrate, you close your mind to everything else. Meditation means just a openness, a relaxed openness. It is not concentration. While listening to me, you are listening to the birds singing in the trees too. The wind passing through the trees, singing its song, you are open to it too. The aeroplane passes by, or the train, you are open to it too. This is meditation. You are simply open, available. Conscious, available. All doors open. Not that you are only listening to me, that will be very poor. Because these words singing in the trees are a background music to what I am saying. They enrich it. They are not distractions. They don't distract the mind. They distract the mind only if you are concentrating. Remember, distraction is a byproduct of concentration. If you are concentrating, then you look, the word is disturbing you. Because it distracts. The word is not distracting you. If you are not concentrating, if you are simply available here, whatsoever happens, you are available. Open. All the doors open. If it starts raining, you are open. If it starts a storm, you are open. If the clouds thunder, you are open. If it, whatsoever happens, you are open. Your openness is total. Yes, you are open to me too, because I am also happening here. And I would like to tell you, if you are open in such a way, your understanding will grow. If you are concentrating on me, your knowledge will grow. If you are concentrating at me, what I am saying, then you will cling to the words. That's why one concentrates, so not a single word is missed. So you go on hoarding. You don't want to miss a single word. But you are missing the whole life. If you are simply open here, meditatively open, I am saying something, you are listening to it, just in the same way as birds will sing and you will listen. And both will enter in you together, and you have no choice. You are choicelessly silent. Then your understanding will grow. Then you may not remember what I have said, but you will understand what I have said. Then you may not be able to go and reproduce what I have said. You may say, I have completely forgotten, but you have absorbed it. You have digested it. It will show in your life. It may not show in your knowledge. It may not be possible for you to give a discourse on me, but it will transform your life in a subtle way. Next time you will be angry, suddenly you will find the quality is different. Next time you will be making love to your woman or your man, and you will find the quality is more meditative. It is less sexual. Next time somebody will insult you, and suddenly you will find nothing is disturbed. You are not hit by it. It has not touched any wounds. Next time you will be standing before the mirror and you will start laughing at yourself. You have laughed at others. That is violence. When one starts laughing at oneself, he is becoming a little wiser. Then he knows the whole ridiculousness, one's own stupidities. And when a man starts laughing at himself, he is becoming less ridiculous. He is becoming more and more aware, alert. That's why he can laugh. He can see his own foolishness. And when you can see your own foolishness, you have become wise. Only fools are not aware that they are fools. Wise people are always aware that there are thousand and one stupidities. The more wise you become, the more aware. Aware about everything. Listen to me in a meditative way. And love me in a meditative way. Then my love will not distract you from Jesus, Krishna, Buddha. Then my love will make all your loves more enriched. My love will make your life enriched. I am here to enrich you, not to impoverish you. Without Jesus, you will be a little poor, certainly a little poor. Such a beautiful person as Jesus has not to be forgotten, has not to be thrown into oblivion. Such a beautiful man as Buddha. Humanity has suffered very much because of this monogamous mind. The Buddhists will not think of Jesus at all. The Christians will not think of Buddha. What calamity, what curse. Because if a Christian can love Buddha too, his Christianity will go very deep. And if a Buddhist can understand Jesus too, he will understand Buddha far more, far better. And if you can understand Mahavir and Muhammad and Zarathustra and Lao Tzu all together, and you can love them all together as different expression of the same divine, certainly your life will be the life of an emperor. Right now it is just a life of a beggar. A Christian is a beggar, a Hindu is a beggar, a Mohammedan is a beggar. I want you to become kings, kings of kings. These all people have sung the same song, the song of all songs. Language differs, expression differs, gesture differs, but the content is the same. The second question, is not there a possibility, sir, that people will misunderstand you? You say, a possibility? Every possibility, sir. At the most, the best is they will un-understand me. Worst, they will misunderstand me. It is happening every day. Just the other day, I talked about being natural, authentic in your relationship. And one sannyasi outside the camp jumped on another sannyasi and they bat each other. They thought, I have told it, be natural. And they must be feeling anger. They must be feeling antagonism between them. They must have been carrying it. Now I have said, be natural. And I have said, don't worry about the consequences. They were fighting about a woman, both. So they were at each other's neck, and the woman was sitting and looking at the whole affair. She seems to have understood better. There is every possibility. These words are dangerous. Whatsoever I am saying is like a sharp sword. If you are not very alert, aware, you will cut your own head or somebody else. And it has been always so. Jesus, our Linchi, our Bodhidharma, all have been misunderstood. In fact, Zen has become so appealing in the West, not because people are understanding it, but because it has the greatest possibility to be misunderstood. No other religion has that much possibility. It is the most potential. You can misunderstand Zen so easily that much intelligence is not needed to misunderstand it. To misunderstand Hinduism, a little intelligence will be needed. To misunderstand Buddha, a little more understanding will be needed. To misunderstand Jainism, you will have to be really very intelligent. But to misunderstand Zen, no, nothing is needed. Anybody is capable to misunderstand it. Listen, says Linchi, the founder of Rinzai Zen in Japan, no effort is necessary. Do nothing special. Just move your bowels, urinate, put your clothes on, eat your meals, and when you are tired, go and lie down. The stupid may laugh at you, but a wise man will understand. He who exerts himself is surely a fool. Now the beat generation has understood it perfectly well. The hippies and the hippies and all, they say we are doing our thing. And Linchi says so. You have not heard another saying of Linchi, and it is fortunate that hippies don't know about it. Otherwise there will be great danger. The other saying is, on the way, kill anything you meet. kill the Buddha, kill your master, kill your parents and relatives. Only then you can be liberated. Now, certainly, an open license to murder. It is very fortunate hippies have not heard about it. So easy to misunderstand such a great statement. Kill everything that you meet on the way. The way is the way of meditation. When you go in and you are meditating, whatever comes on the way, kill it. Then don't shirk it. Because whatsoever you allow on the way will become a hindrance. You are seeking emptiness, you are seeking a no mind, then anything that is allowed will be part of the mind. Hence, even a Buddha is there. When a Buddhist sits, and Linky was a Buddhist, so he knows about Buddha. When you sit and you are a Buddhist, when everything disappears, then only Buddha statue remains. All is gone. But Buddha remains in tremendous glory, with a great luminosity. That has to be thrown also out of the way. Otherwise, that will hinder the path. A Hindu knows, when everything is gone, then Krishna is standing there with his flute playing. Ramakrishna knew it well when everything went and his mind was getting almost empty, Kali will stand there. He has loved the idea of Kali so much. And that was difficult for him, to push Kali aside. Impossible. Even to think seems sacrilegious. To push Kali aside? No. But that is the barrier. When he was learning the last meditative step from Totapuri, Totapuri said, you have to kill this Kali. This one too. This woman is too much of a hindrance. Gather courage. And Ramakrishna will close his eyes. He wanted, because now he knew it well, only one barrier remains. But he will close his eyes and he will forget. The woman is so beautiful, the mother of the whole universe. And she so enchanting. He will completely forget about Totapuri and all the nonsense that he has been talking about. And Totapuri is sitting in front of him. And Totapuri will know, because his eyes will start swelling with tears. And he will start swaying. And he will start dancing. And Totapuri will say, stop! Again you are doing the same. And he will open his eyes and he will say, it is difficult, master. It is very difficult. It is impossible. I can kill my mother. I can kill my father. I can kill my wife. I can kill myself. I can kill you. But Mother Kali, the very idea simply disappears when I close my eyes and when she is there, luminous in all her glory. The very idea is not there. I forget again and again. I'm sorry. Then Totapuri said, this is last time, because I cannot stay long. Enough of your stupidity and your Kali. He rushed out. From the street he found out a glass piece and he brought it in. And he said, now you close your eyes. The moment I feel that your tears are coming and the Kali has come, I will cut your forehead with this piece of glass. Hard. Blood will start coming. When I cut your forehead, remember that you have to cut the Kali in two. And Ramakrishna says, but how I will cut and by what? And Totapuri said, how you will cut and by what? How you created the Kali? By your imagination. So if you can create Kali by your imagination, created sword by your imagination. I take the sword the Kali carries in her hands. Borrow it and kill her. The master was harsh, and he was threatening that he will leave immediately if he is not followed. And Ramakrishna closed his eyes and he started swaying. And Totapuri cut his forehead hard. His whole life the mark remained later on. And when he cut his forehead, then he remembered. In a single moment of courage, he took the sword from Kali's hand, cut the Kali in two. He fell one part on this side, another on this side, and opened the emptiness between the two. For 6 days, Ramakrishna was in samadhi. When after 6 days he opened his eyes, the first words that he uttered were, "The last barrier has fallen." Now this is what Lynch is talking about the last barrier. So he says, on the way, kill anything you meet. Kill the Buddha. Kill your masters. Kill your parents and relatives. Only then can you be liberated. But you can become murderers. Please, don't kill anybody on the gates. You may be carrying the idea for many days. What I am saying here has to be understood very, very delicately, softly. You are not to bring your foolishness in it. Otherwise, rather than being held by it, you will be disturbed by it. Truth is dangerous. If you can't take hell from it, it will destroy you. Truth is dangerous because it is potential, it is powerful, it is fire. You are playing with fire when you come close to truth. If you are not alert, you will be burned. A little mistake and you will be burned. When Moses saw God on Mount Sinai, a little mistake he was committing. When he saw God, he rushed, literally. He rushed towards God. But God shouted, "Wait! Throw your shoes away. This is holy ground." He has forgotten to put his shoes away. Now this is simply symbolic. Shoes protect the feet. Jews have never been able to understand the meaning of it. Your mind is the shoe of your soul. As shoes protect the body, the mind protects the soul. Now Jews have been thinking that God was worried about the shoes. What nonsense. Then the whole earth is a holy ground because everything is full of gods. No, he is not talking about the shoes. In fact, even in the shoes he is. That's why we cannot show where God is, because where to show? Everywhere he is. Even if I show with my finger that there God is, he is in the finger too. You cannot finger God where he is. No. The shoes is a symbol. Just as the shoes protect the body, the soul is protected by the mind. Put shoes away means put your mind away, Moses. Don't rush me through the mind, otherwise you will be burned. If you rush through God, through the mind, that means you will interpret. You will bring your prejudices, your ideas, your thoughts. Naturally, you will miss. And then God said, "Go back and tell to your people, nobody is to come on the mountain while I am here. And particularly say so to the priests, because they may try to come." Moses said, "But why?" Jesus said, "If they come, they will be burnt utterly." God said, "They will be burnt utterly." Go down and tell your people nobody is to come. And particularly tell the priests they are not to be allowed, because they are the most irreligious peoples. And they are pretenders. They may think that they are priests, so they are needed. And when God is there, they should go. But they cannot see me. In old Tibet, there is a saying that if you see God and you are not prepared, you will die. Truth is dangerous. And what I am giving to you here is truth, bare truth, naked truth. I am not even dressing it in any way. So you have to be very, very careful. Your responsibility is great. If you cannot understand what I am saying, then please know that you don't understand, but don't interpret it in your own way. Keep your shoes off. Otherwise, there is every possibility. You will misunderstand. You will misinterpret. And your whole life will go in a wrong direction. Walk very carefully and cautiously. You are on holy ground. The third question, I would like you to answer me that you tell me something, but I don't know the question. Even if you know the question, the answer cannot be told. And when you even don't know the question, then it becomes even more impossible. What question can be answered? If answers were enough to answer questions, all questions would have disappeared long before. Not a single question has disappeared. In fact, each answer creates more questions. No answer has been able to dissipate questions. Each answer has created 10 more questions. Humanity has more questions now than ever. 5,000 years of thinking have created millions of questions. Not a single problem solves. That's the whole history of philosophy. Bertrand Russell has written in his memoirs that when I was young and I went to the university, I went to study philosophy with the idea that it will answer my questions. But when I came out of the university, I started laughing at the whole ridiculousness of it. Because my old questions remained the same, they became still more sophisticated, that is true. But they remained the same, and from the university I had brought millions more questions. Not a single question has been answered. Millions more have been created. No answer is possible, because really the question is not a question. When a question is there, you may be able to feel it correctly or not correctly. When a question is there, that simply shows there is some block in your consciousness. The question is not the thing, the block. That you are not flowing rightly as you should flow. That something is going wrong. It is not only a question. It is a question of the energy going wrong. Something is missing in your life. Something that is needed, very much needed. And you are groping for it, but you cannot even name it what it is. That is the situation. You say, I would like to answer me that you tell me something, but I don't know the question. In fact, even those who ask so many questions, they don't know what they are asking. That's why you go and ask him, and again you feel you have not asked the real question yet. A great sensitive soul, Gertrude Stein, was dying. On her dying bed, suddenly she opened her eyes. Friends were around. And she said, "What is the answer?" They were puzzled because she had not asked any question. Somebody said, but what is the question? You have not asked the question. So she opened his eyes again and she said, "So okay, what is the question?" And then she died. And we don't know what was in her heart. Yes, that is the situation of man. You don't know the question, you don't know the answer, you don't know exactly what you want to ask. You go on asking many things, and many answers are given to you, but no answer fits, because in fact, the question has not been yet asked. Unless you ask the real question, how can any answer help? But that real question is not an intellectual thing. Let me tell you, that real question is, who am I? All other questions are just formulations of this basic question. Somebody asks, what is God? But that is not a real question, because you don't know yourself how you are supposed to know God. Somebody asks, who created the world? But that is meaningless. You don't know even how you came into existence, what to say about the world. First, try to solve your own mystery. Encounter it. So the basic question of all questions is, who am I? And how to ask it? Can somebody else answer it to you? That is not possible. Because how I can say who you are? If you cannot say yourself, how I can say who you are? And whatsoever I say will become again information in the head. I can say you are God. So you will carry this idea that I am God. But again and again you will find that this is not right. Because somebody insults and the God becomes very angry. And then you feel, what type of God I am. And somebody takes your woman and you want to murder, and then you think, what type of God I am. And then you see a beautiful woman going by and lust arises in you and you say, what type of God I am. And then you see a car and you want to have that car. And you think, what type of God, hankering for a car? And small things, and very small things, so small that you feel even embarrassed if you have to talk about them. Very small things. The salt is not enough in your dal. And the God is curious. Or the tea is cold, and the God throws tea in the kettle and the everything and becomes mad. Now then if trouble arises, because this Buddha, Jesus, Krishna, me, we go on saying you are God. The answer is right, but you are not at the point where you can catch it. You are not ready for it. The more you look into yourself, you feel yourself more like a dog than like a god. All great things that have been said about you, you simply become puzzled they have been said about you. These Upanishadic seers, they are saying that you are Brahma. You? But these people just mad, saying things that they don't know what they are saying, you and them, not possible. You have not only accepted it, you cannot. It is impossible. Hence you have created gods also in your own image. The Bible says God created man in his own image, but the truth is just the reverse. You cannot trust this idea that God has created you in his image, because that will create many difficulties in your life. You have created a God in your own image. If you go and look at your gods, look at the Jewish God. The Jewish God said, I am very jealous. Oh, beautiful. This seems a man-created God. The Jewish God said, I am a very jealous God, jealous God. If you don't follow me, I will destroy you. I will throw you into hell. And don't worship any other gods. I am the only God. And so is the Mohammedan God. And so is the Christian God. Very jealous. Destroy all other gods. I am the only God. This seems to be very human. It doesn't look very godly. God seems to be very political. Doesn't seem to be very religious. Cannot tolerate other gods. God should be more non-serious, more playful. Hindus have a playful God, but then the play, you see the Hindu gods play, you will find human faces. Brahma created the world and created the first woman and fell in love with her own daughters. And he started chasing her. Very Hindu gods. More like Hindus than like gods. Chasing his own daughters. And the daughter became very much afraid, literally. She started dressing, hiding herself into different forms. She became a cow. The god became the bull. Perfectly a Hindu god. When the woman becomes a cow, God becomes the bull. And she tried all forms. That's how all the animals were created. She became a bitch. So the God became the dog. And it started. This seems to be more human. Rather than you thinking that you are God, you would like to think that God is human. And you look at Hindu gods very much afraid. Indra sitting in the heaven is always afraid. If some poor rishi starts meditating deeply, his throne starts trembling. He becomes very much afraid. He sends beautiful girls to corrupt the rishi. Now he has not done anything. He was just meditating. He sends beautiful girls to corrupt him. He is afraid of his status. Because if this rishi attains to ultimate, he may become the next Indra, or he may claim Indrahood. Very jealous. Very ordinary. If you look into Hindu Puranas, you will be surprised. The stories seem to be about man, not about God at all. Brahma and Vishnu once went to see Shiva. There was some trouble. In the first place, trouble should not exist in the world of God. But there were some troubles. Some political party must have been creating some trouble. and they could not figure it out what to do. The Rakshasas, the devils, that is the opposite political party. They have been always creating trouble for gods. So they went to Shiva because he may be able. He is a dangerous fellow. Just as politicians go to hooligans when they cannot manage. The Shiva is the god of death. He is dangerous. And he has a very dangerous company. Ghosts and all sorts of Beelzebub and devils and satans. They are all his disciples. So he may be needed. Whenever there is some real problem, he is needed. They went to see. The guard tried to stop them, but nobody feels good with the guards. You don't feel, nobody feels good. They pushed the guard aside. They said, Krishna, you keep away. It is an urgency. It is an emergency. They pushed away the guard and entered, rushed in. And Shiva was making love to Parvati. Now, that was not very polite of them. But the problem was such that they didn't bother about courtesies. They stood there. But Shiva is Shiva. He didn't bother at all. They were standing. He said, okay, stand. Hours passed and he was making love. And they got fed up and he said, stop. And Shiva won't listen. Parvati was very embarrassed. She closed her eyes. Since then, women have been making love with closed eyes. And he was so involved. In fact, he was not really aware that somebody is standing there. And Vishnu and Brahma felt very much offended. This is a great insult. So they cursed Shiva that forever and ever you will be remembered by your sexuality. Hence the linga and yoni, the symbol of Shiva. The linga and yoni are male and female sexual organs that became symbolic of Shiva. But very human stories. Can you improve upon them? It is impossible. Very human stories. Too human. All too human. Rather than you think that you are a god, you create gods in your own image. No, that answer won't help if I say you are God. You will have to find your own answer. The question is existential. You will need an existential answer. The question is out of your being. Only out of your being can come the real answer. You will have to go deep inside yourself. First ask, who am I? Ask, who am I, who am I, who am I? Let this question penetrate into every fiber and cell of your body and your mind. Let your whole body, mind vibrate with one question, who am I? It will take months, sometimes years, but it pays. Let your whole being vibrate with one question, who am I? Let this question sink so deep that whatsoever you are doing, the question remains deep down vibrating. Who am I? Walking, eating, talking, listening. The question deep down goes on pulsating. Who am I? Who am I? By and by, the question will not be verbal. It will be just a feel. Who am I? Not verbal. Not these words. Who am I? Just a question mark in your being. Just a questioning, a quest. And then one day, when your total being is so full of the question, that your whole being has become a question mark, the answer comes. Not verbal. Not that somebody says, listen to Sita. The question is from to Sita. Listen to Sita. Nobody says that. Suddenly something explodes as a seed has exploded, as a bud has opened, and you are full of the fragrance. You open your eyes, all questioning has disappeared, all problems have disappeared. Then you live the life of no problems. And only then you live. Only then you are. Then everything is a benediction. Each breath is a blessing. And all is nirvana. All is God. That's what's needed deep down in you to Sita. You ask, I would like you to answer me, that you tell me something, but I don't know the question. Good that you don't know. Because if you know the question, it is bound to be the wrong thing. This is the question. And don't use it as a question, because the answer is not going to come from the outside. The answer is hidden in the question itself. The question is the outermost core of the answer. The answer is the hidden tree in the seed. The question is the seed. Take the question as a seed and become a soil for the seed. A skillful soil will do. Your head becomes a soil. That I call skillful soil. Only one question, only one question, only one question. You become pregnant with the question. And the pregnancy becomes so deep that you cannot forget in any moment. Even while you are sleeping, it will be there. Even in your sleep, in your dream, the question will continue, who am I? Not so much in words, remember, again I repeat, not so much in words, but the question will be there, who am I? Pulsating, streaming, moving deeper and deeper and deeper, and one day it reaches to the very core, it hits your heart, the inner space, the heart space, and then something opens. If you can ask rightly, within your own being, you will come to the answer. And that is the only answer that you come yourself to. The fourth question, having been touched, can I pass through the whirlpool of you very fast? Since nothing pleases or displeases, will I cease to be in contact with you and your love by no longer wearing orange and the mala? First, you ask, having been touched, can I pass through the whirlpool of you very fast? That shows you have not been touched. I have touched you, but you have not been touched. Because those who have been touched, they don't want to pass it at all. You ask Taru, she will say she does not want any nirvana. Those who have been touched, if it is a question of choosing between enlightened and me, they will choose me. And because of this choice, they will become enlightened. If you are still choosing enlightenment against me, you will not achieve it. Not at least through me, you will not achieve it. You are in such a hurry, you have not been touched, you are simply greedy. And the person has taken sannyas only 1 week before. Too much in a hurry. You don't understand what you are saying. You don't understand what you are seeking. You don't understand where you are. You don't understand to whom you are asking. You say, having been touched, can I pass through the whirlpool of you very fast? If you are touched, you would like to reside in this very whirlpool forever and forever. You will not like to get out of it. If you have been touched, you have fallen in love. Who wants to get out of love? If you want to get out of it, it simply says you are not in love at all. You just wanted to go through it, maybe you can gain something. You are not a sannyasin. Sannyas you have taken, but you are not a sannyasin. You have only orange clothes and the mala and nothing else. Your heart has remained uncolored. And when the heart is uncolored, whether you keep the mala and orange or you don't keep doesn't matter. Even if you keep, you are not in contact with me. So dropping doesn't matter. You can drop it. I will not say so easily to others. When I see that their heart is getting colored, dyed in my color, I will not say to them, drop your mala and clothes easily. I will not say at all. But to you I can say, because you have only mala and the clothes and nothing else. The plus is missing, hence the question. And you ask, since nothing pleases or displeases, will I cease to be in contact with your love? You are already out of the contact. Just by being here you think you are in contact. Just by listening to me for 5 days you think you are in contact. Or just by breathing in the meditation and jumping a little you think you are in my contact. Then you don't understand at all. Contact takes time. Contact takes your commitment, needs your commitment. If you are not committed to me, how the contact is possible? And when I say nothing pleases or displeases me, I am saying about me. It will not displease me at all. If you all drop orange, it will not displease me at all. It has not pleased me that you have taken orange. So that is not a problem. If nobody comes here, I will be as happy as I am now. If the whole world comes here, I will be as happy as I am now. My happiness is my inner quality. It does not depend on you. I am not dependent on you. My happiness is mine. That sometimes hurts you too. You would like me to be dependent on you. You would like me to go after you and say, don't do it, it will hurt me very much. You would like me to persuade you. That will help your ego to feel more inflated. But my happiness is an independent phenomenon. I am simply happy, not for any reason at all. You are not you. Doesn't make any difference. But it will make much difference to you. You can drop the clothes, that will not make much difference to me, no difference at all, but it will make much difference to you. You say, will I cease to be in contact with your love by no longer wearing orange and the mala? As far as my love is concerned, it will go on showering on you. Because it is unconcerned with you. Please try to understand it. When I am showering my love on you, it is not a concern. Not that if I don't shower my love on you, I shower my love on you as if it is a choice. It is not a choice. I am not showering love on you, I am love. So when you are not there, then too it is showering. When I look at the trees, then too it is showering. When I look at the rock, then too it is showering. You are not special. I am not doing anything special to you. It is just the way I am. It is very ordinary. It is simple. Just as in I am alive in front of you, not because of you. If you go away, I will not die. You were not the cause of my breathing. You will go away, I will breathe. Breathe with the trees, breathe with the stars. But even stars go away and trees go away, that will not change anything because I am not causally related that way. In the same way is my love. I am not showering it on you. Yes, it is being showered, but nobody is showering. There is nobody to shower it. I am love. But it will make much difference to you. If you drop the mala and the orange, you will become closed. You will not be able to receive it. It can be raining, but if you put the pot upside down, the clouds will go on raining. They don't depend for the pot to be put right side up. They don't wait for it. They will go on raining. It is irrelevant whether the pot is right side up or right side down. Whether it is upside down, that doesn't matter. The rains will go on falling. But if the pot is upside down, it will not collect any rainwater. Or even if it is upside, right side up and closed, then too it will not gather. Or even if it is not closed and gathers water but has leakages, then too it will miss. And the clouds will go on showering. They are not particularly addressing their water to a particular part. I am not addressing my love particularly to you. But it depends on you. If you want it to get into your heart, you will have to remain open. These clothes and the mala are just gestures, symbolic, that you are open towards me. That you show from your side you are related. From my side there is no relationship possible. Our relationship is from your side. There is no master here. There are only disciples. The master is dead. A master is a master only when he is not. The day I came to know, the same day I disappeared. It is an absence. It is an emptiness, a nothingness. If you want to receive this nothingness, you will have to be cautiously related to me. you will have to be open towards me. These orange clothes and mala are nothing. They are just gestures. But very significant as far as you are concerned. To me, how does it matter whether you wear orange or not? How it is concerned? But to you it matters much because you live in these small things. You are still your clothes. Because you are still your body. The mala and the locket means much to you because you still think yourself as the picture. When you look in the mirror, you think this is you. To me, it makes no difference. It is not my picture. Because there is no possibility of getting a photograph of me. All that you will get will be only of the form. And I am not the form. That is the whole message. So, if it pleases you, drop wearing orange and mala. But think before you do that. Meditate over it. First foolish thing you did that you became a sannyasi. You must have become a sannyasin without thinking about it. Now this will be a second foolish thing to get out of it without thinking. So please, at least when you are going to do the second foolishness, be a little more alert. I have heard about Mullah Nasruddin. He took his pay 1 month. And there were a 10 rupee note extra. The accountant must have counted wrongly. But he was happy. Next month, there was 10 rupee note missing. So he immediately complains. The accountant said, Mullah, and what about the other time? When I had given you 10 rupee note more, then you didn't complain. Mullah said, listen, when a mistake is committed once, it is okay. But when it is committed twice, I complain. Remember it. Once you have committed a mistake, now don't be so foolish again. The last question. When I feel compassionate, it is my holier-than-thou attitude. When loving, too sad and serious. When playful, it irritates. Should I kill myself and lessen other people's misery? Good idea. Really good. But again with a wrong base. You ask, should I kill myself and lessen other people's misery? Again, you will feel holier than thou. Even after you have killed, you will roam like a ghost and haunt people and you will say, listen, I killed myself for you. Live for yourself. And if you want to kill yourself, kill for yourself. And a man can be allowed to kill himself for himself if he has lived for himself, never before it. Because if you cannot live, even if you cannot live for yourself, how you can kill yourself for yourself? It will be impossible. Life is the first step. Death is the second. Death is a higher phenomenon. Those who are not able to live rightly, they cannot die rightly. How can you die rightly when you were not able even to live rightly? You missed the primary school and you are trying to enter in the university. You could not pass there. Life is simple. Death is very complex. First live what your life is, seems to be wrong. You say, when I feel compassionate, it is my holier-than-thou attitude. Compassion has not to be directed towards others. A real compassion always feels happy while somebody accepts your compassion, your love. He has made you grateful. You have to thank him. When somebody accepts your love, you have to thank him. He could have rejected, then what? He could have said, no, I don't need your compassion. Then what? He gave you a chance to show your love. He helped you to flower. You have to be grateful. But ordinarily we think he has to be grateful. We showed so much love. Nonsense. Because by showing your love to him, he may not have flowered. He may have even been crushed. But you have flowered. The real gain is yours. The real gain is of one who loves. It may be the others, may not be the others. That depends. But the real gain is always of one who loves. The loved one may not gain anything, may be even harmed. Love can become suffocation. Love can kill the others. So many children are killed by the mother's and the father's love. And so many husbands are killed by the wife's love. And so many wives are killed by the husband's love. People suffocate each other. And they say, we love you. And the more they love, the more they suffocate you. They don't allow you any freedom. Love is not necessarily a blessing to the other, but to one who loves, it is always a blessing. So the lover should feel grateful. Drop this attitude of being holier than thou. You are not obliging anybody else. When the flower flowers and the perfume is released to the wind, the flower does not feel that he has obliged anybody. When the sun rises and millions of flowers open and millions of birds sing and the whole earth becomes awake, the sun does not feel that he has obliged anybody. It is his nature. He is happy by being himself. Your compassion seems to be wrong-rooted. You are thinking in terms of serving people. You are a dangerous person. You are a do-gooder. And these are the most mischievous people on the earth. You can become a Mahatma. Avoid. Enjoy that you love, that you have compassion, that you serve somebody. Enjoy it. It was an opportunity to flower, to bloom. And then you say, when loving, I feel too sad and serious. Yes, because when you are loving and somebody loves you, in compassion it is simple. You are compassionate. You don't take anything from the other. In love, you have to take something from the other. That hurts you, and how you can take anything from others. It is difficult to give it is even far more difficult to take. Because in giving, the ego is fulfilled. But in taking, the ego is hurt. Hence, Patanjali says in his Yoga Sutras, neither give nor take. He does not mean that don't give and don't take, because life will not be possible. Even he has given the Yoga Sutras. No, he doesn't mean that. He is meaning this, that giving, don't think that I am giving, and taking, don't think that I am taking. You will be surprised, in Hindi, we don't have any equivalent word like thank you. Dhanyavad is there, but it is artificial. It has been created. It has been created to translate thank you. Otherwise, in Hindi, we don't have any word for thank you. It is something. The society has existed for thousands of years. The oldest society in the world has no word for thank you. Why? Because it is always God who gives and it is always God who takes. So who we are to thank or take a thank you or give a thank you, that is the meaning of it. Who we are. We are just instrumentals. In Hindi, if you say thank you to somebody, dhanyavad, it looks a little awkward. It looks a little out of place. Can you think to thank your mother? I have never said to my mother, dhanyavad. And I have everything to thank her. But I have never said. And I cannot say. That word simply means meaningless. She has not thanked me. She cannot. The word seems meaningless. When you say to somebody, thank you, it means he has done something to you. He is the doer. And then, when you do something to somebody, you wait for the thank you. Then you are waiting silently. Give the thank you. Otherwise, you will get angry. In the Western society, thank you is very common. People are very fond. Even a son can say thank you to the father and to the mother. In the West, it seems cultured. In the East, it is uncultured. Just to think of saying thank you to your mother is impossible. It cannot be even thought. It is always God who takes, who gives. Sometimes he takes from my side, sometimes he takes from, gives my, from my side. Sometimes he becomes a giver and sometimes he becomes a taker, but it's always he. So who is there to thank and to be thanked for? Nobody. It is one reality. That is the meaning of Patanjali when he says, don't take, don't give. He is saying, let God be the giver and God be the taker, you don't come in. It is difficult to give because the hoarding mind, but not so difficult as to take, because when you take, it hurts. It hurts very much. You have to take something from somebody, it makes you sad. You are on an ego trip. When loving, I feel too sad and serious. When playful, it irritates. Yes. An egoistic person cannot play. How can you fall so low to be playful? Playfulness is for children, ungrown-ups. Playfulness is for foolish people, a serious person like you. How can he be playful? It happened in one camp, two sannyasins were found playing cards. A great political leader, one of the oldest MPs in India, he was also in the camp, and those two sannyasins were staying just by his side. He could not believe it. Sannyasins playing cards, He rushed to me. He was a very old man, 75, renowned all over the country. It was late in the night, 11, he knocked on my door and he said, "What is happening? What type of sannyasins you have created?" I said, "What has gone wrong that you have to come in the middle of the night?" He said, "Two sannyasins are playing cards." "So what is wrong in it? Who else will play cards if sannyasins cannot play?" But he said, "I thought the whole idea is that they will be serious seekers." "They are seekers, but why they should be serious? Have you ever heard any person who has been serious and has attained to God? God is very playful. Can't you see the whole existence is so playful, so celebrating? If your Mahatmas go to God, they will not like him very much. They will say, 'What you go on doing? Why you go on creating butterflies? Why in the first place so many flowers? Why so many trees? Why so many stars? Why?'" God is excess. You exceed only all limits when you are playful. God is extravagant. God is very luxurious. That's why in India we call him Ishwar. Ishwar means the ultimate in luxury. It comes from the word Aishwarya. It means the ultimate in luxury. Play is ultimate luxury. Poor people work, rich people play. And when a person becomes a total player, that he plays whatever he is doing, his whole life is play, then he is the richest man in the world. He may not have a single pie, that is not the point. Just look at me. What I am saying to you is not a serious phenomenon. I enjoy. It is a play. I play with these words. I play with you. And I would like you also to be playful here. It is not a serious place. This ashrama is not a serious ashrama. In fact, the very word ashrama means where you rest and play. The very word ashrama means rest, relaxation. I can understand you are on a big ego trip, so the playfulness irritates you. "Should I kill myself and lessen other people's misery?" Please don't do that, otherwise you will haunt other people. And right now you are in the body, you cannot do much harm. If you become a ghost, and you will become a ghost, because such people have never been heard to go to heaven. And recently I have heard that even devil has started rejecting them. The hell is too full of these people. Just few days before a politician died, literally he knocked first at the heaven's door. He was thinking that he will be received there, but the doorkeeper said, "Sir, this is not the place for you." But he said, "I'm a great politician, a great leader." He said, "That I know, but leaders and politicians never are allowed in this place. You go to the other place." Very reluctantly, because this was not a VIP treatment, but what to do? Now he's alone and nobody, he had to go to the other place. Devil looked at him and said, "No, enough. We have enough of politicians." So he said, "What do you mean? Have I to go to beg you to New Delhi? No place in heaven, no place in hell. So have I to go back to New Delhi again?" A ghost is not allowed anywhere nowadays. You will haunt these people. If you live, live for yourself. If you die, die for yourself. Let your life never be a life of a martyr. Let your life be always a life of a lover, not a martyr. Let your life be always a celebration, not a sacrifice. Enough for today.